you have to figure out how to figure things out. So look it up, Google it, watch YouTube.
Welcome back to the Wild Business Growth Podcast. This is your place to hear from a new entrepreneur every single Wednesday morning who's turning wild ideas into wild growth. I'm your host, Max Brandstetter, founder, podcast producer at Max Podcasting. And you can reach me at max at maxpodcasting.com to save time with your high-quality podcast. This is episode 126, if you switch it up. It's actually 162, and today's guest is Jackie Hermes. Jackie is the founder and CEO of Excelity, a super awesome company that helps B2B SaaS companies and startups in that space with customer acquisition, lead generation, and the alike. She has grown Excelity from $0 to multiple seven-figure million in revenue without any funding. And in this episode, we talked about how she scaled that business, what she learned from her previous business, Sweet Monkeys, which a little teaser, it might be about monkeys that are sweet, it might not be, and why she enjoys embarrassing her children so much. It is Jackie H. Enjoy the show. Alrighty, we are here with Jackie Hermes, I probably pronounced that wrong, even after all this practicing, but Hermes, the CEO and founder of Excelity, serial entrepreneur, super duper cool person. Jackie, how you doing? Thanks for joining today.
I am fantastic. Thank you for having me.
This is perfect. Super, super excited, super duper. I don't know, like I never say super duper. I don't know where that came from, but
roll with it.
Excited to chat today. Before we get into Excelity and kind of your amazing growth story there, I want to start talking about monkeys and sweet monkeys, actually. So would love to start with your cookie company. How did this idea of making cookies and actually selling and distributing cookies come from?
Well, man, I almost like blocked this part of my life out, I swear, because
we're really diving into the nitty gritty details here.
Starting a food based company is so hard, and I didn't have any idea what I was getting myself into. But like, let's go back to how it started. It was actually, I mean, we'll get personal right away. It was actually my kid's dad, my ex-husband, who wanted to go get an MBA. And then one day he was like, actually, I don't want to get an MBA. I'd like to start a company. And I was like, what did you say? And he had found these cookie recipes on Craigslist of all places. And it was a woman that owned a restaurant in Buffalo, New York. And she was selling the restaurant, but she didn't want to sell the cookies along with it. Like, she kind of always thought it could be a business, but she was never able to make anything of it. And I was like, all right, well, you know, like, what's going to cost more, sinking some money into trying to start a company or getting an MBA? I don't know. It's kind of like horse apiece. So he ended up flying out there and buying the recipes. And we did our darndest to make a company out of it for 2 years. So it was a process of finding a facility to make the cookies in and then finally outsourcing them. And you don't have any idea what kind of licensing you need and the like different food standards that you have to follow. I still get advertisements from Uline, where we were buying our packaging. I think I was designing all of the like the logo and the stickers that go on the packages in Microsoft Word. I don't have a clue how to design. So we just kind of hacked this thing together and spent a lot of weekends at farmers markets. We eventually got distribution into 12 different grocery stores and then ended up selling the company for barely more than we bought it for. So I wouldn't say it was a big exit success here, but it did teach me a ton.
Exited with more than you started. So, and you got to enjoy a lot of cookies in the process. So I think that part is invaluable.
That is true. And was able to save a lot of the money that we made while we were you know, selling the cookies at all of these different places. Now, it takes a long time to make money when you're selling $5 bags of cookies. And we were a little ahead of our time in that the cookies were vegan, and veganism was not cool yet at that point. So people would come up to us at these festivals and be like, oh, vegan cookies, that sounds disgusting. And I was like, watch it. I'm putting every night and moment of my free time into these. But I think I started Excelity shortly before I stopped working at Sweet Monkeys and sold the recipes off to someone else. So, and I was working full time too. It was a very busy time of my life.
I maintain that that's the sweetest exit of all time. So I have to give you credit for it. $5 bags. Yeah, that is, I imagine, like the quantities that you have to sell in order to make a profit off of that. What advice do you have for anybody that is, I don't even know what to call it, like selling a product or service that's pretty on the low price end of the spectrum, but obviously still want to have some financial success with it?
Look for opportunities to sell higher quantities at the same time. So for the food company that, or the cookie company that was selling into grocery stores, where they would buy higher quantities to stock their shelves with. So some of our clients have lower price points and they're selling SaaS products on monthly subscriptions. Oftentimes for them, we're looking for associations that their buyers might be part of, or different co-marketing opportunities where you can reach a lot more people at one time. So it's a lot easier to sell 50 bags of cookies to a grocery store than it is to stand at a farmer's market and sell 20 bags of cookies while you're there for 6 hours, right? Any opportunity to scale and get those numbers up is probably my best advice.
Yeah, it sounds a lot more difficult to actually like physically hand them out to every single person, as great it is to do that every now and then, to be hands-on that way.
For sure. I mean, it's more work up front to get in front of the grocery stores, right? You have to pitch a lot of them. You're going to hear, no, we got turned down by a lot of places. But once you have that going, then you can sell more. It's easier in the short term to show up at a farmer's market, but it pays off less in the end.
And when you look at the Sweet Monkeys journey overall, which is a fantastic sentence. I really like the name there, even if you do block it out of your memory. But what would you say is the biggest lesson you learned from that part of your career that has helped you with Excelity?
The value of working hard, which I always knew. It's something that I was raised with. My dad is like the hardest worker on the planet, but I was able to put that in action and figure it out and put my own blood, sweat, and tears into creating something that was my own. I think I really learned how to hustle at that point. I had just graduated from college at that time too. So when you're insulated by the education system and whatever jobs you're working at that time, I don't think you really know what it's going to be like in the real world. And I dove in head first, and I took a lot of, you know, the dedication and the time investment into my next company, and it helped make it what it is right now.
So let's accelerate to Excelity and here for all the tongue twisters, but
love it.
Thank you. How in the world do you go from cookies to B2B marketing SaaS?
Yeah. Well, I mentioned that I had a day job, and that was my day job. I was running the marketing department at a $80 or so million SaaS company. And it was a crazy, amazing experience. I was 24 at the time when I started running that marketing department, because they were private equity owned and they were, you know, getting rid of some of the very expensive heads of departments and giving people like me opportunities to do stuff like that. So it was, I didn't have a clue what I was doing, but I was confident that I could figure it out. So I stepped up into the role. And after a few years of doing that, I went out on my own into agency life, which is another thing that I didn't know what to expect. I didn't really know what I was getting myself into. I wanted to be a consultant on my own, and I wanted to have more time to spend with my son, who was a baby at that time.
So you're doing all these things that you basically have no idea about. So that's fun. No pressure, no stress or anything.
I think that's life. Now my company is multi 7 figures, and I still daily, I'm like, I'm going to have to figure this one out. I think that is going to be a common thread as I approach new challenges for the rest of my life. And it probably is for everyone else too.
So as you're constantly facing things that you have no idea about, is there a typical way that you approach these unknowns to give you some momentum to actually, you know, have some sort of an idea of how to do it at some point.
For sure. I mean, everything that you're doing has been done before, right? Everything that I'm doing in building an agency has been done before. So I lean on coaches and mentors. I have a number of friends that I met through the HubSpot ecosystem that have agencies that are three or four times the size of mine. I call them and ask them how they approach it. I've had a business coach that I worked with that I've been working with for 6 years. I read a lot. I Google it. I think a lot of people recreate the wheel. They completely try to figure it out on their own and push through it instead of trying to give yourself a jump start and asking other people that you trust and have been where you are.
Yeah, that's some. I always kick myself about it because I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but so often I think we get in the trap of like really trying to figure something out when like a quick Google search could save like hours or days of weeks of work. Because there really is like, there's like how to's on everything out there.
Yeah. I mean, I tend to maybe even oversimplify things where any challenge I'm like, this can't be that hard to figure out. And then I go try to figure it out. I mean, I've had clients say to me before, especially early in my career, well, it's not that simple. The solution isn't that simple. And I say, well, why can't it be? I actually just wrote out my core values the other day, and simplicity is one of them. Like, I want the easiest path to getting things done to where it's 90% complete to perfection, you know, and where I want it to be, and then ship it. And it's over. So yeah, Googling it and figuring it out. I tell my kids all the time, you have to figure out how to figure things out. So look it up, Google it, watch YouTube. That's something I'm really trying to instill in them.
With simplicity being so important to you, when you wrote out your core values, was it just one core value and it was the word simplicity?
It wasn't. It was a handful. I'm actually reading a book called The Art of Showing Up, and it talks about how you have to show up for yourself before you can show up for others. And part of showing up for yourself is knowing who you are. I know I have a very good idea of who I am, and I'm not afraid of speaking up and stating my preferences, but I've never actually written down who I am, right? Like, we have all the documentation for our businesses on our core values and our mission and where we want to be in however many years, but we don't do it for themselves. So I'm in the process of that exercise.
There you go. So you're just writing left and right now.
Yeah, truly.
Right now, literally. But with Excelity, there were obviously lots of decisions you had to make in terms of what the company looked like, what the core values were. Can you take us behind the curtain into those early days of Excelity? What were the biggest things that you had to figure out pretty early on that have shaped the course of your company?
Great question. I started consulting and it was only me, and I really only wanted it to be me. But there are lots of marketing consultants that are successful when it's just them, but you have to have some structure to deliver. So I was working with early stage companies, funded, bootstrapping. I mean, I didn't really have a preference at that time. And without an ability to deliver on the advice that you're giving, your services are essentially worthless. And a lot of these companies didn't have anyone internally to execute on the plans that I was making for them. So I found out pretty quickly that I needed more resources. And just like I was just saying, I tried to find the simplest way to do it and the easiest path. And so I found some freelancers. Some of it went well, some of it didn't. The ones that didn't, I think it's really hard when you're employing, you know, like contract labor or contractors that are not super bought into your brand, right? They're building their own companies. And so if they drop the ball, then it's your name and your reputation and your contract on the line. So I ended up making the decision to hire people full time. And that's something I had to completely figure out on my own. Even when it comes down to the logistics of how to hire, how do you run payroll? Do I need an office? Am I going to require people to show up there? Who do I hire? Right? I can do all of these different things in running a business: sales, marketing, HR, finance, et cetera, et cetera. You know, like, what seat do you fill first? And that's a process of, for me, it was just looking at every situation and trying to make the fastest logical decisions that I could. And I made a lot of mistakes, but I did a lot of things right too.
That's something that's so key and a pivotal point for any new entrepreneur. Like, that's something I've seen with my podcast production business, is like, doing everything by yourself is like totally fine, totally, totally fine, up until the point that you get enough clients that like you can't handle more, like the you kind of hit the ceiling there, and then it starts to become like a huge problem. So that outsourcing and hiring and figuring out is a huge, that's like a part that I'm super geeking out about right now. And when you look at other areas of Excelity, how about the actual services you offer? Like, there's lots of different services that you offer. What has gone into tweaking and determining, okay, here's actually what we're best at and where we provide the most value and what we're actually going to like highlight on our website and highlight to clients and so on?
That is also a good question that has changed massively over time. I mean, I started as a general digital marketing consultant where I was pretty clear with my clients about what I knew and what I didn't. And of course, I was always willing to research and advise, but I think you have to be really upfront about what your experience is and what you're good at. And I think that is where a lot of agencies bomb, that they're, oh yeah, we can do it all. And then when it comes to the execution, they fall short and they lose their clients. We still try to do that as much as humanly possible, where yeah, we do have a lot of services, but we're very upfront about what we have internally and what we outsource and what our team's expertise is and what we're willing to learn. I think as long as you are clear about that, you know, like we have a client that's actually in Egypt and we're doing tons of stuff that we have never done before. And they know that we haven't done like WhatsApp marketing before. But if they want to work with us to figure it out, we are more than willing to do it. So that has been a really interesting experience. I started consulting and again, just being honest about what my experience was. And then we ended up productizing for a while. It was a fun experiment. I will say it was interesting. But it didn't bring in the exact clientele that we wanted, because I think often when your service is productized, you have a lower price point because you are delivering, I don't want to say canned deliverables, but it's a set amount of deliverables that are intended to drive whatever the results are.
Right. Packages.
Right. Exactly. And so we had packages that we were selling. And again, that went well, but it's hard to grow a business when you have clients that are paying $2,000 a month or $2,500 a month. It just wasn't getting us to the scale that I wanted to be at. And so we backed out of that, which I still have probably a good quarter of my team that was with us in those really early productization stages or productized stages. And that is fascinating too, because it's easy to update your website and change what you're offering, but it's not easy to back people out of the habits that you have taught them how it is, right? So rolling out those internal changes and changing the actual way we physically deliver services, you know, is a completely different ballgame.
And it's so tough in the agency space or in the marketing space. Well, I'll even venture and call it the marketing agency space, because there are so many B2B marketing agencies out there. And what I always wonder is, you know, what do you do different? How do you stand out? So for you and Excelity, what do you think makes you different?
I think that the personal relationships we have with our clients are very different than a lot of agencies. I think a lot of agencies are looked at as vendors, and we strive to not be that. So one of our core values is being transparent and telling people what's going on. Actually, we have a few subcontracted agency partners that we have found a lot of cracks in their transparency. Like, you know, if they have some turnover on their team and they have to switch resources and they're not super upfront about it. We just tell our clients exactly what's going on. We communicate with them when they might be going over budget. I think a lot of agencies, when clients reach the end of their budget, they're like, well, pay us more. Good luck. And we have taken over the contracts of a lot of companies that are leaving agencies like that. So overall, I have a newer, she's probably been with us for 2 months, employee that was working for a larger agency, B2B, located in Nebraska. And she said the one piece of feedback she gave her old team when they asked her what it was like was that there's no ego. It's only about doing what's best for the client and making sure we're standing in their shoes and treating their money and their programs the way that we would want them to run for ourselves. It's not about, you know, ego and flashiness and all of that stuff. So I think that makes us very different, frankly.
No ego, amigo. Shout out Jess Sims from Peloton.
There you go.
If you know, you know.
Oh, I know.
But that communication is so key, and something that there's a crazy difference. Like, some companies are so good with communication, and some it's like you're like pulling teeth to like get a quick response. You've obviously set a culture where communication and those personal relationships are so key. How have you been able to do that to ensure that your clients always feel like they have a quick and helpful kind of check-in whenever they want to?
We keep, I mean, regular check-ins with them clearly on the calendar. I think that's something a lot of agencies do. We sign an SLA with them that talks about how quickly we will respond to them and what they should expect and what we should expect from them. And we come together, we discuss each other's expectations, communication preferences, and sign the document physically to say, like, we agree that this is how we're going to work together. I think doing some of that expectation setting up front is really important. And it's something that a lot of companies really miss.
You alluded to it before, but you've led this thing and you and team have grown this from zero to multiple seven figures, which is something I think a lot of people strive for and would love to, but a vast majority of people don't really get to that level. When you look back, are there any key moments that jumped out of, ooh, this was a really, really good decision that we made that has helped you get to that level of revenue?
We were in the 200,000, 300,000, 500,000 range for years and like scraping for growth. And, you know, every year it was like, I want to be at $1 million, but I'm not there and I don't know what I'm doing wrong.
You should have just gone on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. That right? Probably would solve everything.
I don't know that I would honestly know a lot of those trivia questions. I think I mentioned to you before.
You just Google it.
Yeah. No, I'm just cheater. Cheating. I love it. Yeah, I definitely like work in a hole and really control what goes into my brain, minus pop culture.
work in a hole. I love it.
Yeah. So when we finally started growing, I would say there are probably three things that really changed. One was I hired a head of sales. I thought that I'm decent at sales. I'm pretty good at sales. I can bring a sale from the first meeting to close, but I'm not a hunter. So I was taking referrals and, you know, doing all the things that most business owners do, but I wasn't out there consistently calling, knocking on doors, whatever it may be to fill the pipeline. So when I hired my head of sales, who he's just has been the most amazing addition to our team. He's so positive. He's just constantly, he's like quirky and he owns it. And it makes his sales process so incredibly, like he walks away friends with the prospects, which I think a lot of salespeople absolutely cannot say. And in the two and a half years that he's been with us, he's gotten so many job offers, which I think is really cool and a testament to what he's doing. So his work has definitely helped us grow. I think a lot of companies do not want to invest in a head of sales because they think they can do it on their own. They think they're not ready. They think they don't have money. And a good head of sales pays for themselves 10 times over. The next thing was getting on LinkedIn. So I'm 3 years into my LinkedIn content journey. And as someone who got started early in the creator program, they had recently, I think they even opened up video capability on LinkedIn like 6 months before I started. It wasn't easy to get eyeballs at that time. It's definitely a game of consistency and you have to be open and honest in your content. You have to be personable. You have to be likable. You have to actually interact with people. There's a lot that you have to do, but growing my presence there has helped drive a lot of traffic and just awareness to my company, which is really cool. And then I would say the third thing is just working on my own mindset. I've always been decent at handling stress, but 3 years ago, I started really looking at myself and the way that I responded to stress and the things that I was taking on and how I was running my schedule and just being more reflective on making sure that I'm being productive and not busy and I'm not doing things to serve my ego. I'm doing things to serve the company. And, you know, there's a lot of hard questions that people do not ask themselves. And all three of these things lined up into our growth that took us where we are now.
I really appreciate the three. There's something in magic. Shout out my buddy, Ryan Follin, who when you're talking about doing a presentation or any sort of pitch like that, he always says to just keep it to three things because three is such a great number that just resonates with people. But your three things you shared there are fantastic because it's such a range. Like head of sales, that's like basically a key hire, super important to have, especially in the sales space. LinkedIn, and for anybody that follows you on LinkedIn, you're like taking over LinkedIn basically. You have incredible content there. And then on the personal side, that stress reduction, like this. So three very different areas, but they all tap into kind of different worlds that there's just worlds of opportunity for. It's really neat that all of those work together and have contributed to the growth.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been a crazy journey.
It has. So it really just inspiring to hear about. And when you look back, now that you have gotten above those levels of revenue that you were kind of stuck at for a while, is there one thing that if you flash back to day one of starting Excelity that you would definitely do different?
Everything is about relationships. And I would have not gone out trying to sell services right away. I would have figured out who the key people that I wanted to know were. And I would have worked my butt off to become friends with them. I'm watching my husband right now start a consulting company, having 20 years of experience and all the relationships that he has. He was able to replace his income as a CFO within 6 months of starting a consulting company. I didn't, jeez. I know. And it's because he had so much experience. He was well respected. He networked like 5 meetings a day for 3 months and he had all those people to call. Right. So he already had kind of the structure in place that made him very successful in being able to start that company. And gosh, I mean, in his first like month, he made more than I did in my first year consulting. So yeah, I think that building those relationships and making sure you're really purposeful about your network is key in starting an agency or a services company.
I like how you described it of, I wish I would have made friends or been friends with more, you said it much more eloquently, but the attention to not just like making connections, but actually like getting to know people and becoming friends with people. Cause I think that's the difference. Like a connection could mean anything on social media, but if it's somebody that you actually like as two people are friends or can, you know, call each other up at any time and chat about things, like those are the kind of connection, well, not connections. Those are the type of friends that whenever you're launching something or need support with something, really, really have your back and will be there to, you know, shout from a mountain that, you know, Jackie's doing this, Jackie needs help with this. So really, really love your approach there.
You have to do it on purpose. I literally made recently, probably about 3 years ago when I was going through all of this change, a list of all of the people that I thought were doing cool things, that were starting companies, that were like adopting kids like I have, and made a list of people that I wanted to get to know and started reaching out to them and inviting them over for dinner or whatever it may be. It doesn't always work out, right? And not everyone has space for you, but you have to really work at those relationships and look at your circle and make sure the people that you want in your circle are there, not just the people that you've happened to hold on to.
Well, thank you. That was around the time I launched this podcast. So thank you very much for including me on the list. It was very thoughtful for you. We've really just come full circle now. If I started this podcast and I'm still going with it, you can too. All you need is a hippo. No, just kidding. Podcasting is a wonderful journey. One of the best decisions I ever, it's tricky to say, but one of the best decisions I ever made was starting this podcast. It has truly changed my life, impacted the lives of so many out there. And of course, there are plenty and plenty and plenty of podcast production tips, podcast hosting tips, interviewing things and insights and aha moments that I've picked up along the way that I would love to share back with you in your podcasting journey. So if you want a podcast for your personal brand or your business and you'd appreciate some insights and some help along the way, email me at max@maxpodcasting.com. I will help answer your questions, can help you out with pointers on the production side and the hosting side, and we'll save time with your high-quality podcast. Email me at max@maxpodcasting.com. Now, in a terrific segue, let's get to a fashion show at lunch. Shout out Kelly Kapoor. Let's switch gears a bit. Let's get to somebody else who is probably on your list. We'll get to a fan favorite segment called the Wild Business Shout Out of the Week.
The Wild Business Shout Out of the Week!
Thank you. I work hard, blood, sweat, and tears into that. But Wild Business Shout of the Week is where we talk about a creative marketing campaign or something kind of in the buzz, clever marketing space that just gets people talking. And I'm sure she was number one on your list of people to get to know and be friends with. But someone who always creates headlines is Kim Kardashian. And you're probably listening to this wondering, what the hell is Max? Like, where is he going with this one? But Kim Kardashian at the Met Gala had, and I don't know if it's gala or gala. I've never gotten that right in my life. Shout out Gala Gala Island. She had quite the outfit. And obviously the Met Gala is like known for its crazy, elaborate, over-the-top outfits that celebrities wear. What is it about that whole thing about the outfits and fashion at the Met Gala and Kim in particular in 2021 that caught your attention and kind of just fascinates you?
I don't watch the whole thing, but I usually see images.
Sure, sure. That's what we all, yeah, I say the same thing.
I mean, I for real don't. I just look at all the pictures on Instagram because I'm like, oh, I like to see what everyone's wearing. And it's interesting because people take such big risks at this specific event. And so I always like to see who is taking the biggest risk and whether it pans out for them or not. And Kim Kardashian, so many people hate the Kardashians and I love them, not gonna lie, because they are geniuses. They are marketing geniuses. They know how to get attention on the things that they're doing. I mean, people say that they have no skills, and yet there are two billionaires of the five girls that are kids, which is insane. They know how to build businesses and they know how to generate awareness around what they're doing, and they know how to get people talking. And that's exactly what Kim Kardashian did at the Met Gala. The outfit that she's wearing is hideously ugly, but yet, regardless of whether people are praising it or criticizing it, it's about the one thing that people are talking about still. And I just thought it was really cool that, you know, she's willing to wear something that isn't going to be, oh, that's pretty, or even, oh, that's cool, but, oh, that's interesting, and I wonder what that means. Anyway, those are my thoughts on Kim Kardashian.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, it's like no matter what the Kardashians do, there's lots to talk about it, so obviously there's like genius and brilliance in that. People say Kris Jenner is just like incredible at helping to kind of generate attention and moves from a PR standpoint like that, but yeah, from a business standpoint, it's off the charts, and I'm sure there'll even be more billionaires from that family. There's just something about, I guess, going against the grain in terms of fashion. I mean, in any space, really, that goes a long way and just keeps yourself sticky and memorable in people's minds. I saw like Billie Eilish did like the whole like Marilyn Monroe thing. Like, there's, I think everybody kind of expects these celebrities to have super duper elaborate outfits, and for Kim to do something that kind of is opposite, I mean, it's not something you wear every day, maybe every other day, is again another stroke of genius. So here we are.
I mean, how many people are wearing black t-shirts right now? It's really a symbol of the times. And I was just talking to my husband last night because he was like, no matter who I'm meeting with now, I used to wear suits, now I wear a t-shirt. And I was like, welcome to entrepreneur life. You get to wear whatever you want. And that's what everyone is realizing over the past 18 months as we sit in our houses and work and hardly report to an office anymore. We can kind of wear whatever we want. And I think the black t-shirt is a symbol of that for sure.
Absolutely. And this is why I wear the bunny footy onesie pajamas from A Christmas Story every single day. Let's wrap up with some rapid fire Q&A. You ready for it?
I think so.
All right. Yep. I hear the confidence. Let's get wild. What is your favorite creative hobby that just always kind of makes you feel better?
Apparently I'm not ready for this. Creative hobby.
I thought you were, the hobby was just saying,
You know, gosh, when I unplug, well, before COVID started, I was in the process of getting my pilot's license and I paused it and I'm now getting back to it. So that is going to be my main and probably only hobby again coming up here real soon.
There you go. Okay. Well, this, you know, sometimes the rapid fire questions write themselves. What is a tip you can share for somebody who is either planning to or in the midst of trying to get their pilot's license?
Ooh, take ground school first and pass the test, because you can blow a lot of money renting a plane and then never pass ground school.
That's what I always say every morning. How about on the LinkedIn side? I mean, you've, as you alluded to earlier, have an incredible following, incredible mix of content on LinkedIn, real thought leader in the space there. What is a tip that you can share for anybody who wants to up their content and helpfulness game on LinkedIn?
Same tip on growing a business, go make real friends. Everyone probably wonders why all the quote unquote LinkedIn influencers are friends. And it's because we all talk to each other. We share our troubles. And I mean, I was on the phone with Amy Volas and Morgan Ingram both yesterday talking about business, about their next moves, about whatever it may be. And those relationships do not happen on accident. And when you can gain those relationships with people and support each other, it's just going to help your business and your LinkedIn presence as well.
Perfect. And so the is there a name, LinkedIn influencers? Is that a thing? It should be if it's not.
It might be. I'm really not sure.
What is a quirk you have? Something a little quirky about your personality that maybe your husband, kids, somebody calls you out for, but it's who you are.
I'm just weird, honestly. And you, I think you kind of don't see it like in day to day. Probably my colleagues don't see it. You don't see it on LinkedIn, but I love to screw around at home. No one tells you when you become a parent that one of your favorite future things is embarrassing your kids. So like screaming Shania Twain at the top of my lungs to embarrass my children, very fun. I remember my parents doing this stuff when I was younger, and I was like, oh, I hate you. Like, why would you do this? And I am so much worse than them. So yeah, I mean, I'm pretty quirky, I'd say, outside of the business.
I love the pat. That could be a creative hobby as well, as embarrassing your kids and man, you feel like a woman and whatnot. But last one, very, very extremely important. If you were trying to break the world record for largest cookie made ever, what type of cookie would you make?
Ooh, well, the cookies that I made before were no bake. And fun fact, I don't really cook or bake. So what would be easy? I mean, you could make a gigantic no bake cookie, but that would be kind of hard. I don't know.
It'd be very tough to bake it.
Yeah, you don't bake it. So there you go. There's my answer.
Wow. The unanswer. I respect it. I'll give it to you. Jackie, thank you so much. This was spectacular. Really, really appreciate your time and lessons and tips and all you do. Big, big inspiration. Where is the best place for people to connect or follow you and also to learn more about Excelity?
Yeah, LinkedIn is probably where I spend the most time. So I always respond to my DMs unless you're trying to sell me something there. And JackieHermas.com, you can check out my course and my new podcast that's launching. And there's a link to Excelity there as well. So there you go.
The art of entrepreneurship. I'm all about it. Thank you so much. And then last thing here, final thoughts. It could be a line. It could be Shania lyrics, whatever you want. Send us home here.
Ooh, I would say probably the best advice I ever received is just start. I think a lot of people are scared and you have to get over your fear and just take those first steps, and that will take you everywhere. And following through and doing the things you say you're going to do are those two. Starting, following through are probably two of the most important skills any entrepreneur could have.
I will take that hint and get started with the outro, and I'll actually follow through with the outro as well. Jackie, thank you so much for sharing your amazing stories, lessons, insights, song lyrics, and thank you, Wild listeners, for tuning in to another episode. If you want to hear more wild stories like this one, make sure to follow the Wild Business Growth Podcast on your favorite app and tell a friend about the podcast. Yes, your friends are just sitting there waiting for Wild Business Growth Podcast episode recommendations. Help them out. You can also find us on Good Pods. And for any help with podcast production, you can learn more at maxpodcasting.com. Until next time, let your business run wild.
Bring on the bongos!